listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, a podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. My question for the day is, what is the treatment for OCD and what is it like to have it? I am your host, Noah Larracy. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hi, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral and cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. So last time we did an overview of OCD and its symptoms, and today we're going to talk about treatment.
Yes.
So what exactly is the treatment for OCD?
Well, we talked about briefly that the treatment is cognitive behavior therapy, and more specifically, it's exposure and response prevention. And this is the evidence-based treatment for OCD. So there's been over four decades of research on this that indicates exposure and response prevention therapy is the most effective for people with OCD. Now, ERP, short for exposure and response prevention therapy, is not your typical talk therapy. You're not laying on a couch or just sitting there talking about your life and talking about your history and what your parents did to you and how you were bullied. No, because the treatment needs to be active for you to learn the tools to deal with directly with the fears that you experience and the compulsions that take up many, many hours in a day.
Let's talk a little bit about ERP and how it was developed. I think it's kind of an interesting story. So it was developed in the 70s, right?
Yes.
And who was the inventor or the developer of it?
Dr. Joseph Wolpe was one of the first pioneers in the treatment of fears itself. And he developed systematic desensitization, which is basically our ability to voluntarily confront a specific fear, experience and expose ourselves to the fear so that over time we learn that this fear is not so threatening. So he was one of the first pioneers. And then Dr. Edna Fowa over at in Pennsylvania refined this treatment to what we now call exposure and response prevention therapy, which means that it is specifically targeted to people with obsessive compulsive disorder, where we are not just desensitizing ourselves to the fear itself. However, we're also preventing ourselves from engaging in those compulsive escape behaviors that actually serve to reinforce that whole OCD cycle.
It's called exposure and response prevention. Let's talk about the exposure part first. What exactly do you expose to and how?
Well, you have to remember that obsessions are not controllable. You have no control over what type of thoughts, what type of sensations, what type of images will come into your mind. And therefore, in order for us to experience this desensitization, we have to learn to confront the fear itself. So we don't just wait for the fear to appear on its own or wait for the images to appear on its own. We purposely trigger the fear. We purposely trigger the sensation or trigger the image. Of course, all within a confined, safe place and all within a specific hierarchy. So for example, if you have a fear of contamination, right? Of course, you're not just going to be fearful of one thing. You're going to be fearful of many things that are contaminated. So some simple things might be common, like doorknobs and light switches and faucets and door handles. However, you might also be avoiding things like public restrooms and public garbage cans, or even the garbage in your own home. So there are many things that you would be avoiding which can be contaminated. which you fear are contaminated. So we would determine what are those things that you fear and that you avoid and put them on a hierarchy. And we would do exposures with things lowest on the hierarchy first, because again, we don't throw anyone into the lion's cage before they've learned tools to manage it. So we first deal with things that are easier, such as a doorknob or a light switch. And you would touch the doorknob and touch the light switch so that your hands are contaminated. And then you would contaminate the rest of your body with that contaminated hand. Because what we don't want are there to be safe things and unsafe things. Or what a lot of people with OCD do is they would touch the doorknob with their hands, and then they would just hold their hands out and not touch anything else because they don't want to contaminate anything else. Well, that doesn't work, because if we do that, then what we're really implying is, okay, I still have to be vigilant about this contaminant. I still have to be afraid of this fear. So the whole point is to contaminate everything in your environment with that doorknob. So we'll start with the doorknob, and then we'll work our way up to public restrooms and public dumpsters. I know it seems strange, and I see that face that you're making right now, Noah. And to be honest with you, you know what some of the most disgusting things are that we touch on a daily basis?
Tell me.
Well, your cell phone, your tablet, that iPad that you have right there, those are some of the most contaminated things, more so than a public toilet or a dumpster. You have a lot more bacterial from that screen than you do in a dumpster. And we don't think about that yet. Are we constantly disinfecting our hands from touching our tablets and our cell phones?
No, we're not.
No, we're not. And we're definitely not disinfecting that iPad, because I see a bunch of fingerprints on that iPad and a couple of splatters. Who knows what that could be? So as you can tell, the person with OCD is only concerned about those things that that person deems to be concerning, even though there are many things in the environment that that person is not thinking about that's also contaminated. So we teach the person with OCD about why we do these exposures and how many things in our environment that could be dangerous are often overlooked, and yet we don't deem them dangerous because that's just the way our belief system works.
We covered the exposure part, which is, I guess, you introduce the patient or the person to the thing that they are trying to avoid, to fear. But the response prevention would be, I assume that they usually would wash their hands or cleanse themselves after this, but they're not allowed to do that in ERP, are they?
That's right. In ERP, the whole point is to reduce the behaviors that allow you to gain relief. Remember, just because you gain relief, it doesn't mean it's long-term relief. It's very, very short-term. And before you know it, that intrusive thought or image or sensation will come back, and you will need to engage in the compulsion again to get the same relief. And the problem with that cycle, that vicious cycle, is that each time you engage in the behavior, the effectiveness of it is going to be less and less and less, kind of like in addiction. You'll need to do more washing. You'll need to do longer washing. You'll need to use more soap in order to feel that same level of relief that you felt 2 weeks ago. So the compulsions aren't serving you any good except to give you this temporary relief that's kind of like a false sense of safety. And what you have to teach your brain is that, you know, I actually don't need to do anything, because even if I don't do anything, the point is to learn that this threat, this perceived harm, isn't so bad, isn't actually going to hurt me. And that is why exposure and response prevention is so effective, because it actually changes your belief system so that it changes the neurochemistry of your brain over time. This is very, very different. So exposure and response prevention therapy is very much more under the realm of behavior therapy than cognitive therapy. For people suffering from OCD and fears, doing just cognitive therapy is going to have limited effect. And the reason being is because the person who's suffering from this fear already know that this fear is excessive, already know that this fear is irrational. Because if the person doesn't have that understanding, an adult who doesn't have that understanding, then that is more in the realm of psychosis and delusional disorders. So the person has to have some awareness that this is irrational. When we do cognitive therapy, what we're really doing is we are trying to teach the patient to see things in a different light, to see the irrationalities of their fears, of their thoughts. And the truth is, you can talk a patient all you want about what is irrational about their fears. You're not going to change their behavior because they already know that the fear is irrational. So the behavioral part of exposure and response prevention gives patients the opportunity to learn, to test the fear, to test the trigger, and experience, oh, wow, I just touched this doorknob and I'm contaminated with the doorknob. However, nothing bad happened to me and I didn't need to do anything to disinfect my hand and I'm still okay. I did not get sick. I did not get a disease. I did not get that disgusting, icky feeling for a long term. And yes, I was uncomfortable for a while, 60 to 90 minutes. However, I'm okay now. I didn't like it. Nobody likes to be contaminated. However, I'm okay. I didn't have to do a compulsion. And as soon as this learning takes place, that gives the person the belief and the confidence to tackle the next difficult item on that hierarchy list. And before you know it, that person can be licking the bottom of their shoes, like what I do, or touching public toilets, like what a normal person would be able to do, and not fear having some horrific, tragic disease or illness that they are trying to prevent.
Let's go over some common exposures that we do here at Renewed Freedom Center with patients.
Wow. I don't know that we have the time to go over all of them. You know, rather than going over all of them, I want to say that it's more important to be creative with the exposures. Because once you understand how exposures work, you then have to tailor the exposure specifically to that person's obsessions and compulsions. So just because a person has contamination fear, it doesn't mean you go and expose them to things that a common person with contamination fears would have. A person could have contamination fears and yet they don't care about doorknobs. They don't care about public toilets. So exposing them to those items aren't going to be helpful. You have to expose them to the items that their obsessions basically indicate. So if their obsession indicates, well, I feel like that corner of my bed is contaminated, and therefore I have to put pillows all around that corner of my bed in order to avoid touching that part of my bed and put a caution tape around that part of my bed, well, all right, that is not your typical or common OCD contamination symptom. However, that's what that person fears. So the exposure would be perhaps removing that caution tape at first, and then maybe removing one pillow, and then eventually removing all of the pillow. And then for the person to be able to touch that corner of that bed. And then for the person to be able to take whatever contaminant is at that corner of that bed and rub it all over themselves and then making sure their whole body is contaminated with that part of the bed. And then eventually it might be taking that part off the bed and contaminating the whole bed with that part of the bed. And then eventually it could lead to that person's head sleeping on that corner of the bed. And then eventually taking that corner of the bed and contaminating the entire room. And then later the entire house. So if you can hear, there's a progression of how the exposures work. However, the most important part of exposures is that it has to be tailored to this specific person's needs and not just any common exposure that you read in a textbook.
Speaking of specific people, you mentioned that you lick the bottom of shoes. This is something that I've seen you do on a number of occasions.
Yes.
And you're quite open on the website that you suffered from OCD.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about your journey with OCD and how you have overcome it?
Sure. I do lick the bottom of my shoes to demonstrate to our interns and therapists and patients as well here at the Renewed Freedom Center that I can lick the bottom of my shoes. And just because I lick the bottom of my shoes and who knows what's on the bottom of my shoes doesn't mean that I am going to be ill or attract some sort of disease. So that's the whole point. When we therapists do exposures with patients, it's important for us to get down and dirty with the patient as well, because that gives the patient a model to observe from. And you're also proving to the patient, hey, you're not the only one doing this. I can do it too. And if we're going to get ill together, well, we'll do it together. So that's the reason why I lick the bottom of my shoes. Now, in regards to my own personal life, yes, I come from a family where there are many members who suffer from OCD. My dad have OCD, or he used to suffer from OCD. His mother, my grandmother, had OCD. My older sister has OCD. And the thing is, we all had different clusters, different types of OCD, and never knew that we all had the same things. I remember my grandmother, she had to brush her hair a certain number of times. And when she brushed her hair, she had to do it outdoors. So even if it's raining or if it's snowing, she would be outside brushing her hair because she didn't want the hair or the contaminant from her hair to fall in the house. It would be hard for me to invite friends over because I remember she would literally be standing over you, waiting for you to touch something and then wipe it down to remove whatever fingerprint that she thought was on it. As soon as you get up from something or as soon as you touch something, she would literally wipe it down. She also had ordering and arranging. So things had to be placed in a specific way, in a specific place. And there was no rhyme or reason in terms of why this pencil had to be in this specific spot. And if you moved it, she would move it right back. And so that was my grandmother. Of course, when I recognized these symptoms, she was already in her 60s and 70s. So in her younger days, she might have had more. Now, with my father, he was your typical checker, and he had fears of harm to the family, to himself, to the property. And I just remember he would check door locks and windows and faucets and stoves to make sure that nothing can trigger or there won't be any harm done to the family. And I remember being a kid and we'd be waiting in the car for our dad to finish checking, and he would literally come out of the house, into the car, and go back into the house, come into the car, go back into the house. There will be times where we'd even drive away and have to come back because he thought he forgot to check something, or he thought he forgot whether he checked something enough. So that was my dad. He was a checker. And when we were young, we didn't think anything of it. We just thought, oh, daddy is just a very cautious person. And that's what we thought of our dad. And then for me, I probably had it worse than my older sister, where I remember the very first intrusive thought I had was about harm happening to my baby sister. And because I was so close to her, and because seeing those images of whatever accident was happening to her was really disturbing to me, and I was so afraid of losing her, that I would, my poor sister, if she did something funny or cute or that I needed to remember, I would make her do it again, so that I could capture a mental image of that behavior or that action. And I was literally storing these images just in case some tragic event actually happened to her. And then eventually my OCD evolved to contamination. Contamination was probably one of the most longest cluster of symptoms that I experienced, to the point where by the time I was in high school, I was showering anything between 10 to 12 times a day. And each shower had to have its own sequence of what had to happen first, second, third, fourth. If that sequence was ruined, I'd have to redo the whole shower, which now looking back on it, my parents and I are always joking that if they had known, all they had to do was tell me to pay for my own water bill, then my showering rituals might actually be decreased. So that's how some families tend to accommodate a person's compulsions, which we'll get into a little bit later when we're talking about families. And then eventually I also had the evenness and symmetry. So my left side had to feel the same as my right side. Anything I did with my left side, I had to do it equally to my right side so I'd feel balanced. And I remember being late. And it's funny, my best friend and I were actually just talking about this a couple of weeks ago, that I was 3 hours late to my own 16th birthday party, which, you know, we had a hotel. It was a party at a hotel that was booked with a DJ and everything. And I was 3 hours late to my own birthday party because I couldn't get myself to feel even enough to get out of the house. So I was constantly repeating behaviors and actions in order to feel even and symmetrical. By the time I got to my birthday party, like half of the people had already left my party. And I also had ordering and arranging. So things had to be ordered according to size, according to color, according to theme, according to categories. If things were moved in a certain way, I'd have to move them back to where it belonged. So that was kind of where, that's in a nutshell where my OCD was.
Wow, that's quite a nutshell. Tell us though, how did you end up getting treated?
I didn't. I never got treatment because nobody ever knew what was wrong with me. I remember when I was a kid, I would be crying in the middle of the night because this is when OCD lurks the most. It's either when you are completely bored and underwhelmed or when you're overwhelmed and stressed. And I remember the nighttime was one of the worst times for me because that was when my mind was trying to shut down and I was trying to sleep. And of course, that was when these horrific images would come into my mind the most. And I would be crying in the middle of the night, and my parents would come and I'd tell them, well, I have these horrific images of my baby sister being harmed. And I'm sure they're wondering, like, what is wrong with this girl? And they would take me to doctors, and pediatricians would have absolutely no idea what was wrong with me. So no, I never received treatment. I just basically spent a lot of time doing compulsions to get rid of my distress and my anxiety. It wasn't until I was in college taking my first abnormal psychology class that my professor saw me reading and rereading and rereading. And she called me up at the end of the class and asked me, do I have OCD? And that was the first time I've even heard about the term OCD. And that was in the early 90s. And when I heard that term, I was so relieved that there was actually something that could explain what was wrong with me. Because up until that point, all of my friends and teachers at school just thought I was this quirky child who everything had to be perfect. So I was a perfectionist as well. And nobody knew what was wrong with me.
Obviously now you've made it pretty much your life's work to make sure that doesn't happen to other people, right?
Yes. So when I first learned that I had OCD, I recognized not only did I have OCD, that many members of my family also had OCD. So when I went to grad school and during my internship, I wanted to make sure that I interned somewhere that treated patients with OCD so I could learn about it. And let me just tell you, even in grad school, there was no information about exposure and response prevention therapy. Yes, we had a class on cognitive behavior therapy, and yes, we learned about systematic desensitization. However, we did not learn about exposure and response prevention therapy. Of course, when I was in grad school, that was in the 90s. So hopefully things have changed today. And where I did my first internship was with Dr. Charles Mansueto. He's an expert in obsessive compulsive disorder in the Washington, D.C. area. He runs the Behavior Therapy Center of Greater Washington in Tacoma Park, Maryland. And he was the first to really teach me about OCD and what treatment entails and what exposure therapy was. And here I am being this intern who I had to be perfect, right? Being an intern, everything had to be perfect. So I was treating people who had hoarding. So hoarding is another subset related OCD behavior. And hoarding is when people basically collect all sorts of things. Now, here I am, this intern, this young intern, wanting to be perfect in everything I did. And I go into a hoarder's house, and I had contamination fears. So going into a hoarder's house where everything was disgusting and everything was contaminated, I had to be there and I had to touch things in this hoarder's house and so forth. So by the time I left that person's house, well, who the hell cares about the doorknob to my car? And who the hell cares about light switches? I mean, I was just in a house where it was clutter and dust and urine and feces everywhere. So it was an eye-opening experience in terms of what a person must go through in order to overcome OCD. And I would say that was pretty much what happened with me. I did my own exposures by working with patients with OCD.
Thank you, Dr. Yip, for sharing that amazing story with us.
I certainly hope that my sharing this story helps other people out there who are suffering from OCD and also helps people out there who have no knowledge about what OCD is, because just because you have OCD, it doesn't mean that your life has to be debilitated forever. There is effective treatment, very effective treatment, and it's called exposure and response prevention therapy. And I am living proof that by going through ERP, you too can come out being functional and able to do the things that you have dreamed of doing.
Great. And we're going to be talking a lot more about exposure therapy and also resources for people who have OCD or know someone that does in future episodes. So hang in there. Thank you for listening to the Stressless Life Podcast. You can join the discussion and find more information at thestresslesslifepodcast.com. Please write to us with questions and comments at podcast@thestresslesslife.com. Until next time, stay stressless.